I'm in an interesting mood. Okay, I got a lot of stories for you guys. We make a lot of big ones, we make a lot of little ones. Trump has announced, or the CBO has announced the score for how many people will be kicked out of in the insurance rolls by Donald Trump's and the Republican proposal. I'm gonna have that for you a little bit later in the hour because I wanna give you a full analysis of it. There's some upsides and downsides to it. You're not gonna be surprised to find out, mainly downsides. Trump is getting cozy with dictators. I'm gonna tell you about that in a second. Before we get started though, I know that they're gonna tell you more about this in the second hour, but I'm a little excited, so I just wanted to break the news to you guys. So you know we won the Webbies. You don't know that. Yeah, some of you do, but most of you don't. It's okay, that happened a little while ago. We won the People's Voice Award for news and politics. Not a big deal. I think our fourth win in that category. By the way, that's all you guys. That's audience voting. The Academy keeps seeing you guys crush everyone else and go, oh, maybe, maybe not. Anyways, shorties, get a load of this. We won best overall YouTube presence. I mean, that's not news, that's not politics. That's overall, all of YouTube, sorry, boom. By the way, audience award. Of course, if the other shows are so much bigger, how come they're not winning? Interesting, okay, anyways. But now that's the Webbies, the shorties. Now we got the streamies. We've been nominated. We're gonna need your help. They're gonna tell you how to do it in the second hour, okay? But Young Turks overall, social video and subject, news and culture. You're not surprised by that nomination, but it's great. It's wonderful to have it every year. It's just great, great stuff. But the reason I'm all excited is we have one of our hosts. I think this is only the second host ever nominated for an award. I think I won best host 1 year. I mean, we're not saying anything. Best web host overall on the planet, but I haven't said a word. Okay, get a load of this. Woke Bay, Hassan Piker, nominated for breakout creator on Facebook. Damn, who's woke now? Who's woke now? Go get him, Woke Bay. Nice job. Nice job. Okay. So that's exciting stuff. The first story we have for you is even more exciting and even better news. I love delivering this kind of news, so let's do it. Now, we were told that Sheriff Clark, who is an odious man, might wind up at the Department of Homeland Security. We were told that by Sheriff Clark. He came out in the press. I thought it was ill-advised coming out going, oh yeah, it's going to want me as member of the Department of Homeland Security. Now, this is a guy that as sheriff in Milwaukee had four different people die in his prisons in just 6 months last year alone. Now, I've told you a lot about two of those folks. One died of dehydration, died of thirst because they cut off the water in his cell for 7 days and wouldn't give him water, and he died of thirst. It's unbelievable. Every time I say this story, I can't believe that that happened in America. And then one was an infant. A woman had gone in 8 months pregnant to prison, and when she was delivering, they refused to get her medical help, and she tried to deliver it by herself, and the baby died. So Sheriff David Clark is as bad a human being as you could find in America, and of course, ironically, he keeps talking about law and order. Well, here's some good news. Talking Points memo reporting, Clark claimed on May 17th that he had been offered a job at Department of Homeland Security, but the department posted on his Twitter account the same day that senior positions are announced when made official by the secretary. No such announcement with regard to the Office of Public Engagement has been made. So right away there was a little bit of like, that's what he says, but Department of Homeland Security does not confirm that at all. Now all of a sudden he's going on other programs and saying, maybe it won't be me. Oh yeah, yummy for my tummy. Go ahead, give me your tears, Sheriff David Clark. Go ahead.
Did you expect all of this to this degree?
Yes, I did. I really did. You know, I'm in that realm now, and I realize that you get into situations where you become a target because you're effective and you're being effective. That's what this is about. What CNN and the left and that cabal is trying to do is weaken the White House and President and Secretary Kelly's confidence in me. And they're also trying to send a message to others. Don't think about working for this administration. Don't think about being a supporter because the same thing will happen to you. I can be an example, if nothing else, that you can stand up to these bullies on the left. You can get through this. And right now it's, they're carpet bombing now.
Oh yeah. Oh, I'm such a victim. I'm such a special little snowflake. They're targeting me. Oh, are they, David Clark? Now, funny enough, there's a couple of small controversies that I didn't even cover for you guys because I think they pale in comparison to his real crimes. But CNN reported that he had done plagiarism on a thesis. Of course, that guy wrote a thesis. Okay, anyway, 47 different instances of it. But I really do think it's minor. I don't think it's that big a deal. He didn't put quotes around things he should have put quotes around. I know people make a big deal out of that, but I'm being fair here. That's not why I would stop any appointment of his. He wears outfits that look like military outfits. He's never served in the military. Of course, so veterans are starting to get mad at him. But again, that's to me is not the main problem. The main problem is people keep dying in his jails in unbelievable circumstances. He should be held responsible for those. I think he should be charged for those crimes. Those are way, way worse infractions, let alone the quotes I'm going to give you in a second. But first, since those tears were so yummy, let's get some more.
Are you going to be part of the administration? Do you think that any of this garbage is going to stick, or do you think the president will stand firm with his choice to work with you?
Well, you know, like I said, who knows? I say that sincerely because I'm in a political environment. Sometimes political decisions are made. President Donald Trump has to do what's in the best interest of his administration.
Right.
And they've cut people loose before. I don't know why. So time will tell. But I know that he values loyalty. We'll see how this goes. But President Trump, he's not going to lose confidence in me, regardless of what he has to do.
Right.
And I will never abandon this guy. The left needs to know this today. I will never abandon this guy, regardless of what he or General Secretary Kelly decide. I will never abandon these guys. I don't do that.
God, I love this. Okay. They cut people loose sometimes. I don't know. Oh, did you get some news? Sometimes they cut people loose. And then he says, but he values loyalty, so I will now suck up to him. Oh, no matter what happens, I'm going to love Secretary Kelly, and I'm going to get on my knees for Donald Trump. I want everybody to know that. You beta, you cuck. Oh, so tough when you've got somebody in your prisons and there's nothing they can do about it. Then you love abusing them when they have no power, right? But the minute there's a guy with power, you're on your knees just like that. Okay, so let's not forget who Sheriff David Clark is. And now, if you give him any degree of power, he loves to kick down as he kisses up. So remember this, he said about people that he thinks might be committing treason against us. Now, is that real treason adjudicated by the courts or discovered by intelligence communities? No, people that Sheriff David Clark thinks are not sufficiently loyal enough to the government. He says we should scoop them up, charge them with treason, and under habeas corpus, detain them indefinitely at Gitmo if he thinks you're working with the enemy. Do you have any idea how dangerous it would be to give this guy real power on a national level? And, well, okay, Sheriff David Clark, are you talking about 4 or 5 guys that might be working with ISIS? Maybe, oh my God, 3 dozen guys that you somehow magically found that were in the middle of plotting something and nobody knew, but Sheriff David Clark's on the scene and you figured it out? No, no, no. Listen to the scope. He says, we have no idea how many people out there have pledged allegiance or are supporting ISIS, giving aid and comfort, but I would suggest hundreds of thousands. I would suggest maybe 1 million. There's 1 million people in the country who have pledged aid to ISIS? No, there isn't. That's 1 million political opponents that he would like to lock up forever without habeas corpus, which is as unconstitutional as anything you could possibly imagine. Put them away in Gitmo and create a political gulag. We're talking about plagiarism? That's the, no. Screw putting quote marks around something. This guy is enormously dangerous on the substance. He shouldn't come anywhere near power. In fact, I think he should be prosecuted for how he dealt with those prisons. But it looks like he might not make it into the Department of Homeland Security after all. So that's wonderful. So the only way this news gets better is you might be wondering, wait, what is Joe Lieberman doing on your sidebar over there? I got more good news. Now, this is Politico. Administration sources had previously described former Senator Joe Lieberman as the leading prospect for the high profile job of head of the FBI. But he ran into resistance from Democrats who questioned the wisdom of installing a former politician as FBI director. particularly as the agency grapples with a politically sensitive probe into possible ties between Russia and Trump's presidential campaign. Lieberman is no longer considered the front runner, an official said. Well, look, man, if those two do not make it into power, it is a great day in America. I couldn't pick two worse people to have any real power in this country. And by the way, on Lieberman, he works at the law firm who represents Donald Trump. The idea of making him FBI director is preposterous. So if in fact these stories are true and Clark and Lieberman don't make it in the government, great day in America. Couldn't happen to worse guys. Wonderful news.
I listened to the full, back to Sheriff Clark, sorry. 15 to 20 minutes of him talking and complaining and crying. So there was aspects, I think he even mentioned at one point, he said the CNN report is out to threaten me, they're trying to threaten me and intimidate me. Coming from the guy who was all about intimidation tactics when he's running his jails. Also the same guy, because I'm sure we didn't forget about the story, getting off an airplane during the playoffs, NFL playoffs, wearing a Cowboys hat, and he's going back to Milwaukee in Wisconsin, and a guy who's a Green Bay Packers fan just shook his head. I'm like, in the airport, had his bullies come and detain the guy for shaking his head at him because he's wearing a hat from another NFL team. Now imagine some real thing happened, but this guy's up for potential position with the Department of Homeland Security, but he's detaining people at airports for shaking their head because of his fake fanfare for a different team.
That might be also why he's trying to get the hell out of Milwaukee and get a national gig, because if you're detaining Packers fans in Milwaukee for being Packers fans, you ain't gonna last long there, let alone the people who died in your prisons. And JR makes a great point. All of a sudden, that guy for wearing the wrong jersey becomes an enemy of the state. I mean, he became an enemy of the state in that airport for that second. You trust that guy to make the right judgment calls? Are you kidding me? All right. Let's move on though to interesting news. I'd call it bad news, but we're kind of used to it now with Donald Trump. So Donald Trump was talking to the leader of the Philippines, that's Duterte. And Duterte's got a horrible track record in vigilante justice, and there's been thousands of people killed in his so-called war on drugs, let alone all the other atrocious things that he has said, some of which I'll give you here in a second. But now we have the transcript of their call. This one not leaked in the US, but by the Philippines, and it's not pretty if you're a rational human being. Probably Donald Trump's proud of it. But Trump calls Duterte and tells him, I just wanted to congratulate you because I am hearing of the unbelievable job on the drug problem. Many countries have the problem, we have a problem, but what a great job you're doing. I just wanted to call and tell you that. Okay. First of all, I can't get over the fact that he sounds like a child in every single conversation. We have a problem, you have a problem. You're doing a great job, an unbelievable job, a wonderful job. So let's find out what kind of job he's doing. Huffington Post explains Duterte's violent anti-drug offensive that has killed an estimated 9,000 people, including many small-time users and dealers. By the way, to give you some context into that, roughly half are killed by police. It's not, hey, brought to justice, brought to jail, and then go through a trial and executed for horrible crimes or giant drug deal. No, they just shoot him in the street, shoot him in the head, kill him, and then send him away. And half are killed by vigilantes. So he's unleashed these lawless vigilantes throughout the Philippines to murder people that might or might not be drug dealers or users. Or maybe just their enemies in a turf war. They're vigilantes, nobody's keeping track. That's what Donald Trump thinks is a wonderful job in the war on drugs. He just wanted to call him and tell him that. Oh, you're murdering people in the streets, I love it. And he does, because he's authoritarian. Trump never believed in the American principles. He believes that there should be a strong man, he should get to fire anyone he wants, he shouldn't have to follow the law. And he's before talked about how, oh, if there's people we think are terrorists, we should kill their family members. That's the kind of guy Donald Trump is. So this is a quote, by the way, confirmed by the government of the Philippines and not denied by the US government. So this call did happen, and these quotes appear to be accurate based on that. I like this portion of the story. They say that when he said that, you know, of course, there's people, other people listening on the American side, not for spying reasons, because they're taking notes on our relationship. And said they work at the White House, they work for Donald Trump. But those guys were, quote, they were surprised White House staffers. But how can you be surprised anymore by anything this guy says? But they're on the phone, they're listening to, okay, all right, we got a great call here with the leader of the Philippines. Got to be a little bit careful because this guy's a maniac. And Trump comes out, you're fantastic, way to kill all those people in the streets. You're doing awesome. People are like, oh, Jesus Christ, here he goes again. That's not in your notes. Nobody wrote in your notes. You're doing a fantastic job of murdering 9,000 people in the streets. Okay, but that's the real Donald Trump. You know, hey, and you Trump voters out there, oh, he tells it like it is. He likes to murder people in the streets. Yeah, he tells it like it is. Remember when he said I could shoot someone on Fifth Avenue and my supporters wouldn't blink, they continue to support me? I hope that was a metaphor. Hope. Okay, now back to the Washington Post on how bad Duterte's reign has been. He has drawn widespread condemnation from human rights groups, which have accused Duterte of condoning a lawless drug war that has terrorized the nation with a campaign of extrajudicial killings carried out by vigilantes and police officers. Duterte has seemingly embraced this barbaric depiction, comparing himself with Adolf Hitler on a mission to kill millions of drug addicts, not people who are selling drugs, people who are using drugs. He made a Hitler comparison positively to himself. He said, I would like to be like Hitler. Oh, you're doing a wonderful job. Oh, great job. The staffers are, of course, surprised. Oh, come on, man. The guy said he'd like to be Hitler. Oh, wonderful. Oh, I just want to call you and tell you, great job on the trying to be like Hitler. Now, does he really understand what he's doing, though? Well, Trump also said on the call, I understand that and fully understand that. And I think we had a previous president who did not understand that, but I understand that. And we have spoken about this before. Duterte had called Obama a son of a bitch because Obama actually thought maybe you shouldn't murder people in the streets. And apparently Donald Trump understands that because he told us 8 times in a row right there, right? And telling him, don't worry about it, man. Go kill. Obama's gone. New sheriff in town. New sheriff says murder people in the streets. America no longer cares about human rights. Okay. Michael Collins, who is deputy director for Drug Policy Alliance, says, it fills me with disgust to see the US president congratulate someone who has overseen the massacre of thousands of his own people in the name of the war on drugs. Hey, libertarians who voted for Donald Trump, how you feeling now? Yeah, man, he's gonna be great, don't worry. No, he's a reasonable guy, he's not like the Republicans. War on drugs. Jeff Sessions is on a war path. He's just increased the war on drugs substantially. And he says he might even go into the states that have legalized it anyway. And now you got the president calling people who are massacring even drug users and congratulating them. Good job, libertarians. Really well played. One last thing, not having to do the war on drugs. Donald Trump, once again, couldn't help himself. And in the middle of the discussions, started telling them where our military is and what they're headed to do. Why are you telling the leader of another country where our ships are? Why are you doing that? So he said on the call, we have a lot of firepower over there, referring to the waters in Asia near North Korea. He said, we have 2 submarines, the best in the world. We have 2 nuclear submarines, not that we want to use them at all. I've never seen anything like they are. But we don't have to use this, but he could be crazy, so we'll see what happens. Referring to Kim Jong-un, a name he, of course, he's not familiar with. He refers to them as this gentleman, because he doesn't know his name at all. Okay. I think other foreign leaders know we have the best submarines in the world. It is not news to them. But he's like a child. Somebody described the submarines to him. He's like, oh, I'm going to tell them where they are. They're by North Korea, and they're the best submarines in the world. Did you know how good our submarines are? They're amazing. I've never seen anything like it. Of course, you've never seen anything like our nuclear submarines. Where else would you see that? Child, through and through, and a petulant, angry, dictatorial child. So when he sees Duterte, he sees a role model. Okay, now we continue in our tour of dictators that Donald Trump has empowered. We go to Bahrain. So recently, obviously, Donald Trump was in Bahrain as part of his overall foreign policy trip. And guess what happened right afterwards? Well, Huffington Post reports, days after President Donald Trump praised US ties with Bahrain and vowed to mend any strain in the country's relationship, the Gulf state launched a violent security raid that led to the death of one protester and dozens of arrests. That's curious timing. I wonder why they decided to do it right after Trump came in and said hello. What did Trump tell them that led them to believe that they could now murder protesters? Let's find out. Bahrain's suppression of human rights and violent put down of protests has created tensions with the US in the past. Former President Barack Obama's administration advocated for reforms and restricted some arms sales. Now, look, Obama, to me, had not done nearly enough on this count. We still deal with these dictatorial governments in the Gulf, Saudi Arabia, Bahrain, and all the others. We still sell them arms. Obama just tweaked that a little bit so that they wouldn't murder as many protesters in the streets, let alone targeting the Shiites in their country. Trump comes in and goes, don't worry about it, man. Do whatever the hell you want. In fact, here, I'll give you his quote. He said, our countries have a wonderful relationship together, but there's been a little strain, but there won't be strain with this administration. So he gave him the green light. He said, don't worry, our arms sales will not be connected to your human rights record at all anymore. Let me give you more details. In late March, Secretary of State Rex Tillerson decided to waive human rights conditions on the sale of F-16 fighter jets to Bahrain. So all we done was, hey, you're gonna get the F-16s and you're gonna get to kill people, don't worry. And don't worry, you will remain the dictator of Bahrain. But we're just saying, hey, just be a little careful in how many people you oppress and murder while keeping your reign, and you'll still get the F-16s. But it's small conditions. Rex Tillerson and Trump come in, they're like, no conditions, murder anyone you like. I got it, you're called king, you're a dictator, it's fine. I just want to make money, and I don't mind you doing that anyway. Killing Shiites, what do I care? Kill whoever the hell you like. King Hamad bin Isa al Khalifa. What happened to the whole thing? I don't like Muslims, and we gotta make sure that they're dangerous, don't come into the country until we figure out what's going on, right? But all of a sudden, you're bound to every Muslim king out there. Oh, you know, King Hamad bin Isa al Khalifa, do anything you like. Okay, Human Rights Watch issued a statement following Tuesday's raid in Bahrain, saying that the timing of the operation, 2 days after Trump's friendly meeting, can, quote, hardly be a coincidence. And this is not the only area where he has empowered dictators. During Trump's visit to Saudi Arabia last weekend, he praised a Saudi airstrike campaign in Yemen that has killed thousands of civilians. He praised it and complimented Egypt's president Abdel Fattah al-Sisi for doing, quote, a tremendous job. Al-Sisi took over in a coup, which of course Donald Trump doesn't know, and has oppressed his people and used considerable force to do that, and has imprisoned people who are against him. Either Trump doesn't know that, or more likely he does know it and thinks not that it's okay, but that it's a tremendous job. So if you're a dictator anywhere in the world, Donald Trump is here and he's got your back. If you think this is what America's about, okay. That's not what all the rest of us signed up for. We thought America was a shining city on a hill. We didn't want a goon out there going all throughout the world empowering dictators to take the gloves off and do whatever they want to protesters or drug users or anything along those lines. And he's just given them the green light. Have at it, Hoss. Kill and oppress anyone you like. It sickens me that he's our representative. Okay, now from the Gulf we go to the Vatican, where he met with the Pope. This one's a little lighter. Okay, President Trump is at the Vatican. He's going to meet with the Pope, which could be a little awkward because they've said things about each other that were not that great. The Pope said, according to Reuters, last year, a man who thinks about building walls and not bridges is, quote, not Christian. That was a sharp reprimand for Trump's vow to build a wall along the US border with Mexico. Now, that's as harsh as the Pope gets, but that message was clear. And how did Trump respond? Well, of course, classy, because he's talking about the Pope. Classy, guy's never been classy in his life. He called the Pope's comments, quote, Disgraceful. And then he went on to say, if and when the Vatican is attacked by ISIS, which as everyone knows is ISIS's ultimate trophy. I'm not sure we do know that. Anyway, I can promise you that the Pope would have only wished and prayed that Donald Trump would have been president. Well, lucky for the Pope, I guess, Donald Trump is president. And he has been president for 4 months. That's why there are no more terrorist attacks. Oh, right, there's still a lot of terrorist attacks, including Manchester. I thought that it was all gonna magically go away. Anyway, the Pope finally got to meet him. And let's see if he is, in fact, grateful that Donald Trump is president. Here's a picture from their meeting. No, doesn't look grateful. Look, a picture's worth a thousand words and it also lies. But in that snapshot in time, the Pope does not look overly pleased. Okay, Trump looks like the Joker and the Pope looks like he's been kidnapped. It's like a hostage video. Okay, okay, yeah. Why so serious? Now, again, full context, to be fair to Donald Trump, yes, I'll even be fair to Donald Trump. That was in the beginning, the Pope apparently kept it very short and shorter than he normally does with other heads of state. But when they had their private meeting for 30 minutes, he came out and he actually did smile a little bit. Okay, giving you full context, but that picture was awesome. Okay, now let's go on the substance of what happened with the Pope. Okay. So Donald Trump is visiting the Vatican, he's meeting the Pope, of course, Pope Francis. Pope Francis is seemingly far, far more progressive than other popes, certainly in my lifetime. And he's criticized Donald Trump's policies before, saying that a true Christian wouldn't build walls, he'd build bridges. And of course, Donald Trump has called him disgraceful and all that. But now they met and Trump, good on him, started with telling the Pope, it's a great honor to meet you. All right, good, wonderful. The Pope avoided small talk in the beginning, but they had a private meeting for 30 minutes, which apparently went well enough. He came out smiling a little bit. And the Pope gave him a gift. It was a sculpture of an olive tree. And he told Trump, it is my desire that you become an olive tree to construct peace. So I love that. And obviously he's trying to send a message. With Trump, you really gotta beat him over the head with it, because he'll miss it, he's not that bright. But he's like, remember olive branch? So this is about peace? He's like, oh, okay. And Trump says, we can use peace. Even the construction of that sentence is funny. Like, not that, hey, peace is great and peace is wonderful and I hear you. We can use it. Peace is useful. Every once in a while, I'll use peace. Okay, all right, but you know, I'll take it, I guess. Then Pope Francis gave him more stuff. He said, Francis also gave Trump a signed copy of his 2017 peace message, whose title is Nonviolence, a Style of Politics for Peace, and a copy of his 2015 encyclical a letter on the need to protect the environment from the effects of climate change. Trump said, well, I'll be reading them. No, you won't. Everybody knows you're not gonna read those. I mean, first of all, the topic matter, but second of all, they're longer than a page. There's no way Trump's gonna read them. If you guys don't know, the security briefings used to be fairly long on different countries and different conflicts throughout the world, because it's complicated stuff. Nobody knew it was complicated. And Trump's, at first they boiled it down to 4 pages for Trump, but it was too long. Now they give everything to him in 1-page memos. And the page is he likes graphs and maps. How much can you fit on a page? You think he's gonna read the Pope's treatise on climate change? Well, I'll read them. I could use peace. Anyway, at the end, hey Donald, how did it go? He said, quote, it's a fantastic meeting. Look, I'm glad it went well, I guess, right? But the reality of the matter is that Donald Trump isn't going to read it, he's not gonna pay any mind to it. And he's shredding the Environmental Protection Agency as we speak. He has cut its budget dramatically. He's threatening to pull out of all climate change accords throughout the world. He's put in fossil fuel industry lobbyists, de facto lobbyists, as the heads of all of our environmental regulation. It's an absolute disaster. And on peace, he's bombing all over Syria, not only Assad's government, but other targets as well. We've killed hundreds of civilians, let alone the raid in Yemen that killed men, women, and children, including an 8-year-old girl. So he has no intention of doing peace. And after the terrorist bombings, which I heard under Trump wouldn't happen, but there's Manchester. Now all the right wingers are out there trying to blame other people for it. No. You said this guy would take care of it. He said he'd take care of it in 1 month after he was elected. Well, we're 4 months in, still happening all across the world. What happened, Donald Trump? And he said that if he just had said the magic words, radical Islamic terrorism, that it would all go away. Well, Trump was thin skin, and what happened? No, magic words didn't work. So we still had Manchester. So what I said yesterday, and I'm glad to see the Pope backing me up, probably not the order of things in the real world, but anyway, but super happy to have a Pope actually on our side and for peace, which by the way, they're supposed to be. And to be fair to the other popes, they were against the Iraq war as well. No matter what they were conservatively on other issues, they are for peace. They don't want people to die. They are actually truly pro-life. They're also against the death penalty. Okay, so the Pope said, hey, you know what? Maybe give peace a chance. Because you know what we've been doing now? We've been bombing the Middle East for decades. And did it make the bombings here and all over the Western world stop? No, they have not stopped. If anything, they might have intensified. So war is not only immoral, and that's the Pope saying that, so he's a pretty good authority on that. If you're a Christian, especially if you're a Catholic, and that's the Pope talking. So do you believe the Pope or don't you believe the Pope? We know the war hasn't worked, we know, and he thinks it's immoral, but on top of that, it's counterproductive. So maybe try the thing that actually works. So wherever you've had peace deals, you no longer have violence. Egypt and Israel, what stopped the bombings in the UK in the first place? The peace deal between the IRA and the British government. So the peace in Northern Ireland. And you go all across the world. You know what actually brings you peace? I know it's shocking, peace. Instead, Trump says we're gonna double down and we're gonna bomb more in the Middle East. Guess what's gonna happen? There's no magic words. You're gonna have more bombings here in the West. And the Pope is right. And unfortunately, Donald Trump won't be reading a word of anything the Pope wrote on this issue. I wish he would, and I wish that meeting was actually constructive and it got through his thick skull. But very, very likely, it won't have helped at all. And all we'll have is more war and less action on climate change. Okay, I gotta take a quick break here. When I come back, I'm not done with Trump yet, by damn sight. So it turns out we find out how many people he's kicking off of insurance. I'm gonna tell you that. And more cuts, not just to Medicaid now, but also to Social Security. Tell you about that too when we return. All right, back on A Young Turks, hashtag TYT Live to talk to us while the show is live, 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern on tytnetwork.com/live. Jeff Waldorf writes in, a dictator brags about killing people and Trump tells him he's doing a wonderful job. This isn't a red flag, it's a neon sign. Diva Athen writes in quotes, what a great job you're doing murdering people. Trump makes me vomit. I wake up every day hoping it's a dream. This can't be real. Could you imagine if it's like Dallas? And at the end, we wake up and Donald Trump was never president. And it was Bernie instead. Whisper of a dream? That would literally be a dream. And some of you folks out there, if he gets impeached, you're thinking, okay, how do we get rid of Mike Pence and Paul Ryan at the same time? I love you, brothers and sisters, but you can't. That's not how it works. We're going to have to bite the bullet on Pence and go kick his ass in 2020. That's if we're lucky and Trump actually does get impeached. Finally, William Knox says, love that picture of number 45 and Pope. Looks like Donnie's asking the Pope how much he wants for his shiny crucifix. He's like, ooh, gold, I like gold. Or he might pull a Putin. Remember when Putin asked Robert Kraft, the owner of the New England Patriots, for his Super Bowl ring? Oh, can I take a look at that? He took it and put it in his pocket and left. Kraft said, what? Wait, where are you going? That was my ring. It's amazing, man. You know what Trump probably said after that? You're doing a tremendous job, Putin. Way to steal that ring. Wonderful job. All right, now, big news. Just came out a little bit before we started the show. Let me tell you about it. Okay. The Congressional Budget Office has come out with its score for the Republican healthcare proposal, the AHCA. So everybody's wondering how many people are going to be kicked off insurance. Hey, you know what? The Republicans and Donald Trump told us nobody's going to get kicked off insurance. Everybody's going to have insurance, and it's going to be lower price for everybody and more coverage. And you're all getting play boxes for Christmas. Okay. Play boxes? PlayStation, Xbox? You're getting both. Okay. Anyway, you get a car, you get a car. So it turns out not true. Of course. How many people are going to lose insurance under the new Republican proposal? 23 million people. Okay. So now I want you to be clear about this. Some people call this Trump care, but no. The entire Republican Party is in favor of this. They're the ones who passed it in the House, they're the ones who crafted it. In fact, they made it more draconian than even Donald Trump wanted. The Tea Party guys in the House were like, no, we want more people kicked off of insurance. Why? Because they wanted even more tax cuts for the rich. Oh, great. So I'm gonna tell you all about that. First, the Congressional Budget Office is nonpartisan. So they tell you what the bill is gonna do, the good news, the bad news. So they had some good news here too. They said the agency also predicted the deficit would come down by $119 billion over the next decade, and that premiums for people buying insurance on their own would be relatively lower than those premiums would be if the Affordable Care Act stays in place. Well, that sounds pretty good, right? Hold. Now let me tell you why some of those premiums are coming down and why you have the deficit reduction in the first place. So prices would come down for the healthy people, because those who are sick or have illnesses in their medical histories would have less access to coverage, and the policies available on the market would tend to be a lot less comprehensive. Well, yeah, it'll cost less if it doesn't cover you when you're sick. So that's not really an insurance plan. So the states could take away your coverage if you have a pre-existing condition. So we're back to the bad old days. They could put caps on how much insurance companies have to spend on you per year or your lifetime. Well, if you have a cap and then you get cancer and they're like, oh, well, I'm sorry, man, you breached your cap. That's over $12,000. So I guess from here on out, you die. Yeah, those are the things we were trying to get rid of. And yes, insurance costs a tiny bit more if it is actual insurance and covers sick people. If it doesn't cover sick people, then it'll cost less, but it'll also be useless. So one of the changes that would allow the states to waive a rule that prohibits insurers, as Huffington Post explains here more, from charging higher premiums to people at greater risk of medical problems. So in the old days, they could charge you more if you actually could get sick. Now we're going to go back to those days. Without that rule in place, insurers could jack up rates for people with pre-existing conditions, effectively making standard coverage unavailable and violating a key promise to guarantee insurance for everybody regardless of medical status, which most Republicans had endorsed. So when they told you that everybody was going to get covered, total lie. When they told you that, well, first of all, 23 million people are going to just lose insurance, no insurance at all. Second of all, if you have insurance, do you? If it's got a lifetime cap, or it's got a yearly cap, or if you switch jobs or you switch insurance for any reason, oh, sorry, some of the states said we don't have to cover pre-existing conditions anymore, so you were sick once, we're not going to cover you anymore. Or if you're older, it's going to cost you way more, sometimes as much as 4 times what it used to cost. On top of everything else, this is a political disaster for them. If it gets implemented, if the Senate passes, this is the House version, it is at the Senate now, and President Trump signs it, and you then have older voters who are getting charged 4 times what they used to, it's going to be a political bloodbath. And it should be, because without insurance and the ability to afford insurance, well, then you have a literal bloodbath. When you say to people you don't have insurance anymore and they get sick, they keep saying, oh, I mean, they got, what do you mean? They got coverage, they can go to the emergency room. Yeah, if you break your ankle, you can go to the emergency room. If you've got cancer, you can't keep going to the emergency room and getting chemotherapy. That's not how it works. That's a death sentence. It is, in real life it is. There's just no way around it. Like, they're a little too afraid to tell you that on TV because it sounds impolite. You know what's impolite? Giving somebody with cancer a death sentence because they can't get insurance anymore, they can't afford insurance. That's really, really impolite. Now, how about the good news on the deficit side? First of all, did you know that Obamacare also reduced the deficit? They never talk about that, but it did. And part of the reason that they made sure that this one also reduced the deficit was so they can pass it with just 50 votes. A complicated reason on reconciliation and how the Senate works, but you can't filibuster it, or there's a potential that they can't filibuster it if it actually reduced the deficit. If it added the deficit, then they would need 60 instead of 50 votes in the Senate. So that was one of the reasons they did it. But there's a more important thing behind the deficit. They explain here at HuffPo, there's no magic behind the bill's effects on the budget deficit. The House approved a measure that slashes federal support for low and middle income families to obtain health care coverage. So, like, yay, it's less of a deficit than we used to have. Well, how'd you do that? Oh, I made sure the middle class didn't have insurance. So before, there was $800 billion extra in Medicaid. So if you're poor or middle class, Medicaid covered you. Now they're taking that away. They're taking away $800 billion. So that's why 23 million people won't have insurance anymore. So hey, I solved the deficit problem by not giving you insurance. How do you like my healthcare plan now? And one more wrinkle here, which is very, very important, and the whole point of why Republicans are doing this. Most of the money saved by cutting hundreds of billions of dollars from Medicaid and billions more from financial assistance for those buying private health insurance will be transferred to wealthy households and healthcare companies in the form of tax cuts with a small amount left over for deficit reduction. So the money saved isn't even mainly going to deficit reduction. That's a tiny amount of it. No, most of the money saved is going to the very rich and corporations in the form of tax cuts. That's what this Republican healthcare proposal is about. It's not about healthcare, it does the exact opposite. It covers less people, makes it more expensive for people who actually need it, and sets all of these barriers to actually getting coverage. It's not about healthcare, it's about tax cuts for the rich. This is Republican 101. Next time you vote for a Republican, don't get surprised. This is exactly what they do. They serve their donors. Their donors want those tax cuts no matter what, even if it costs you your life. That's the reality. I know, I'm so impolite. So impolite to point out the facts about how healthcare actually works. In Washington, you're allowed to cost 23 million people their insurance and hence have a lot of them die in the streets without any care at all. That's perfectly fine. But if you point out that they're actually going to die, they call that impolite and uncivil. Oh, please. I'm a dude. Those are our Republican friends. They come on our television shows all the time. You're saying that their decisions are going to lead to people dying. Yeah, fuck yeah, I'm saying that. Of course it's going to happen. What do you think healthcare does? Oh, so next thing you'll be telling me is that the Iraq war cost lives. Yes, it did. It cost hundreds of thousands of civilian lives. And that was also barbaric, and the people who voted for it are monsters. Oh, you're so uncivil. Killing hundreds of thousands of people is not uncivil. Saying you killed hundreds of thousands of people, which is a fact, is uncivil in Washington. Gee, I wonder why people can't stand the establishment anymore, including the establishment media. Okay, now let me give you more details on more cuts. This was actually from a day ago, even before we got the CBO score. Okay. Now, Donald Trump told us over and over again on the campaign that he was going to protect Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. But of course, Social Security is the most popular program in the country. Over 80% of Americans don't want a dime cut from it. And Trump said on the campaign, quote, "It's my absolute intention to leave Social Security the way it is." All right, that's a direct quote from him, but let's show you Donald Trump talking about all those programs.
Save Medicare, Medicaid, and Social Security without cuts. Have to do it. Get rid of the fraud, get rid of the waste and abuse, but save it. People have been paying in for years, and now many of these candidates want to cut it. You save it. So you've been paying into Social Security and Medicare, by the way. Let's put them in the same, because Medicare does work. With both, you have tremendous waste, fraud, and abuse. We're going to take care of that, okay? But we're not going to cut your Social Security, and we're not cutting your Medicare. And we're going to be able to save your Social Security. We're not taking it.
Okay, we're not taking it. So we already know in their healthcare proposal, they cut, well, only $800 billion from Medicaid. So that what you saw there about protecting Medicaid and saving it and not cutting it can be characterized as what, an 80% lie, 90, 98? No, no, 100% lie. Okay, but if that wasn't enough, now he's cutting Social Security. A summary table indicates that Trump budget, his budget was released recently, would cut disability insurance by $72 billion over 10 years, or about 4% of the program's projected cost. Wait, I thought you said you weren't going to cut Social Security. Well, Nancy Altman, president of Social Security Works, a nonprofit that advocates for expanding Social Security benefits across the board, said in a statement on Sunday that the budget amounts to, quote, a flagrant violation of Trump's campaign pledge. That sounds about right. Now, here's my favorite part of the story. Mick Mulvaney is the head of the Office of Management and Budget. He says, if you ask 999 people out of 1,000, they would tell you that Social Security disability is not part of Social Security. It's old age retirement that they think of when they think of Social Security. Okay, let's just think about that for a second. It's called Social Security disability. Do you think it's part of Social Security? My guess is it's part of Social Security. And then listen to what he's saying. He's like, yeah, of course it's part of Social Security, but most people don't realize it. So if we cut it, I get to cut Social Security, and I hope nobody notices. Almost bragging about how they are aiming to be deceptive. Well, most people don't know it. So I get to cut that part of Social Security. Congratulations, Mick. Nancy Altman, back to her, says disability insurance is an essential component of the protections workers earn when they contribute to Social Security with every paycheck. In other words, what she's saying is, look, when you they take the money out of your check, because they take that Social Security money out of all of our checks, they call it entitlements. And the Republicans always tell you, like, oh, look at these entitlements that you think you're entitled to. Hell yeah, I'm entitled to it. You took it out of my check, it's my money, right? The government takes it out of your check and it does two things with it. It says, when you retire, when you get older, I'm gonna give you that money back. The other thing is, I'm gonna save it for you, I'm gonna add, hopefully get some money on top of that, get you a nice nest egg so that you could at least, you know, not die in the streets when you get older. The other thing is, if you get horribly, horribly disabled, it's also gonna be a little bit of insurance for you. That's part of Social Security. And you paid into it, that's why you are entitled to it. Now they're gonna rob you of that and go, hey, well, if you get horribly disfigured, that's your problem, man, not my problem. I'm a Republican, I'm gonna throw some bootstraps at you. And the money that I took out of that Social Security, I'm gonna give it to the rich. Tax cuts, baby, tax cuts. No, 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 not tax cuts for the payroll tax that pays for Social Security. No, 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 you keep paying your taxes. I'm gonna keep taking that out of your check, but I'm not gonna give it to you if you get disabled. I'm gonna give it to my rich friends. But I think you won't notice. You must be so proud, Mick Mulvaney and Donald Trump. Now, the Republicans say, oh, Social Security, disability guys, they're faking it anyway. The Social Security Administration Inspector General testified to Congress in 2014 that the program has less than 1% fraud rate. That's the Inspector General, that's not the guys whose job is to protect the program. The Inspector General's job is to make sure that they're abiding by the law and not cheating. And he looks at it and goes, 1% fraud rate. Now, do you know how hard it is to get Social Security disability? Of the people who apply, only 28% get accepted in the first year. That means they reject 72% of applicants. Meanwhile, the Republicans are like, oh, they're bums. Oh, you got your legs cut off at work? You're a bum. Go grow some new legs. What do I care? I want more tax cuts for the rich. When Donald Trump said he was not gonna cut Social Security, of course he was lying. He's a pathological liar. What did you expect, you schmuck? No, no, I'm taking money from you and giving it to my buddies. And what did Trump say back during the campaign? One more quote for you guys. I was the first and only potential GOP candidate to state there will be no cuts to Social Security, Medicare, and Medicaid. Huckabee copied me, right? And where is it going, guys? The Trump administration on Tuesday unveiled a budget seeking $1.5 trillion in non-defense discretionary cuts and $1.4 trillion in Medicaid cuts over the course of a decade, while adding nearly half a trillion dollars to defense spending and, of course, tax cuts for the rich. Young Turks. All right, back on Young Turks, let me read you the members of the day. Tony Tucker and Candace White, you guys are awesome. They're going to have a wonderful post game for you guys today. I'm not going to be in it. I'm not going to be in the second hour of the show because I got to go catch a plane to London. Tomorrow, I will be debating at the Oxford Union. Please. I will start the debate with Ardu Duclair. So I'm going to be debating on the issue of Citizens United. You know who I'll be up against? Against the lawyer who won Citizens United in front of the Supreme Court. But this time he's not going up against some regular schmuck who is a lawyer on the opposite side. He's going up against me. I will start the debate with have at it, Hoss. And also on his side, by the way, is Floyd Abrams, arguably the top First Amendment lawyer. Once again, I remind you, I will be on the opposing side. I think we're going to tape it. I hope I can show it to you guys. If you're anywhere near Oxford, I don't really know when it is or exactly where Oxford Union is, but I'll be there tomorrow. So come see me, okay? That's why I'm going to miss the posting. But we do have wonderful things for all the members. Tonight we've got Old School. It's a great special Old School. Wes Clark Jr. and Jimmy Dore, the 420 version of Old School. So you're going to love it. And then Aggressive Progressives tomorrow night as well. I interviewed James Cromwell yesterday on the show. Members got to see it live. He says he'll be on a future episode of Aggressive Progressives. How cool is that? Okay. So all that for members, come join us at tytnetwork.com/join. All right, a couple of quick tweets for you. Mary Gebauer says the AHCA is just a death sentence for poor people. Andrew J.F. Deskin says one thing that is almost never talked about is that Medicaid covers nursing and in-home care, GOP giving older voters the finger. Well, if I know older voters, they vote, so they might give that finger right back at them. Let's hope so. Chris Allen says healthcare is so important, especially since most people had a heart attack when Trump became president. That's funny, Chris. Chris, we got an LOL on that one. You get a t-shirt. Everybody else go to shoptyt.com. Okay. Now, one more story for you guys in this segment. We've got an interesting governor's race in New Jersey. Now, oftentimes I'm talking about Congress, but this is an important seat that they're obviously going to replace Chris Christie. Those will be some shoes and pants to fill. Okay, that's wrong. Okay, I denounce and reject myself, especially as an overweight American from New Jersey myself. All right, anyways, now we've got a couple of candidates. I'm not going to go through all of them. We have an exclusive on it, all kidding aside, at Young Turks from one of the candidates, and that is Jim Johnson. And he's got a new plank that we are proud to bring you guys here on the Young Turks. But before we get to that, I want to tell you about the person who's currently leading in the polls. His name is Phil Murphy. Now, he's a former Goldman Sachs banker. Here we go again. New Jersey, of course, had a governor, Jim Corzine, who was also a former Goldman Sachs banker. Corzine spent millions of dollars of his own money to buy that race, I mean win that race. And Phil Murphy is now spending a lot of his own money as well to try to win this race. He has spent $18 million so far in this race. That is, of course, way, way more than any of his fellow candidates. Of the $18 million, $15 million of it is his own. You can look at that in two different ways. You can say, man, he really wants to win, and he's putting his money where his mouth is. And to be fair to Phil Murphy, he has not been at Goldman Sachs since 2003. So that's been quite some time. Corzine went straight from Goldman Sachs to roughly speaking, to governor of New Jersey. Murphy also served as ambassador to Germany. And of course, you do that when you give a lot of money to one party or another. All of a sudden, you get a nice ambassador job. He also served, I don't know if this is good news or bad news for those of you at home, as finance chair of the Democratic National Committee from 2006 to 2009. But that was the years that Howard Dean was doing the 50 state strategy. So he did give get a lot of money to the state organizations for the Democratic Party. That's the good news. Well, he's also spread a lot of money around in New Jersey. And since 2001, he has given $1.5 million to make sure that all those people appreciated his support. And Star Ledger, writing about it, thinks that that's no big deal. I come to a different conclusion on that, and I suspect a lot of you do as well. They say, and the role his money played is exaggerated by his critics, who say the $1.5 million he donated to the county organizations enabled him to, quote, buy the nomination. No, of course not. When he gave all that money to all those local politicians and they all endorsed him, it was a wild coincidence. That's the thing about politicians. A check appears in front of them and then they wind up supporting the guy who gave them the check. It happens almost every time, and every time it's a coincidence. It's amazing, man. They should play the lottery or something. What luck. And then the Star Ledger continues, all shades of defending Hillary Clinton here during the primaries. Like, wait, are you questioning Phil Murphy's honor and the honor of the politicians he gave money to? They say, did he buy Senator Cory Booker? Did he buy the Sierra Club? Yeah, kind of. That's how it works. You donate to them, and then they do largely whatever you tell them to do. And so, look, I got no beef with the Sierra Club. God bless their heart. I hope they save the planet. But they also have donors, and does that affect them? Yeah, it affects them a little bit, right? I get how it works. And you like this whole idea, I can't, that's the thing that drives me crazy about this. We're gonna get to the exclusive in a second. But Star Ledger, I mean, come on, man. Are you guys journalists or are you not journalists? You're just gonna take it at face value, like that money, millions of dollars doesn't affect anybody? Like, Cory Booker. Like they say it as if like that solves the issue. We're done with it. Are you saying that Cory Booker would do something for money? Yeah. That's what all politicians do. That's what all the citizens think. And you go out there as if like that settles the case. Well, obviously, this is Cory Booker, our beloved, beloved politician of the establishment, is impeachable. It must be true that all the money that he used to grease everybody in New Jersey didn't affect him at all. Now, I want to be clear about this. I don't know Phil Murphy as a person, and he has some proposals that are better than Republican proposals. No question about it. He would raise taxes a little bit, and he would use it for education. He would use it to protect the pensions. And I'm not saying that Phil Murphy's a bad guy at all. But did he buy the support of all those politicians in New Jersey so he can get their endorsement, so he could be the leading candidate? Of course he did. And maybe he'll be a wonderful governor if he wins, right? But he did buy the race. That there's no question that's what happened. And if you're saying that it couldn't have happened because people like Cory Booker are so beyond reproach that if by definition they could not be corrupted, then you're not even a journalist. Come on, what kind of journalist says that a politician can't be corrupted? In New Jersey, of all places? Come on. And in the Star Ledger endorsement of Phil Murphy, it's littered with phrases like, he is sensible, he is practical, he is going to do things that are small changes, but doable, practical, moderate changes. Oh, I've seen this movie before. I've seen it before. Okay? So now there's several other people in the race, and I'm not here to endorse anybody. And there's some good folks, including the guy who uncovered the part of the Bridgegate scandal in the first place, etc. But we do have an exclusive from Jim Johnson, one of the other folks running in the race. Now, let me tell you about Jim Johnson a little bit. He was Undersecretary of the Treasury in the Clinton administration. He worked at Debevoise and Plimpton, which is one of the top law firms. But most importantly, he was chairman of the Brennan Center, which sticks up for progressive ideas as a liberal think tank. I think that's positive. And most importantly, he's been working on policing and criminal justice reform. And that's where we have our breaking news. He has just introduced two new planks in his criminal justice proposals. One is to close youth prisons in New Jersey. Wow, that's bold. See, now we're not playing around. This is not small change. He would end youth solitary confinement, increase the use of station house adjustments, and invest in community-based youth programs. So that's big change. And we often talk about criminal justice reform and how we need it in this country. And here's someone who's willing to do it on a significant scale in New Jersey. And a new one he's also announcing is pardons and expungement. So he's created an expedited pardon system for nonviolent drug charges, expanding the scope of crimes that can be expunged and shorten waiting times for expungement. The reason you do that is our jails are filled with people who had these nonviolent offenses because this insane war on drugs. And he's saying, look, we've found a way to imprison people at record rates, which is absolutely true. And it applies to African Americans and minorities at far, far greater numbers. And then it ruins their chances of getting jobs afterwards if you don't do the pardons, you don't do the expunging of their records. So those are bold proposals and ones that are definitely needed, in my opinion. But I like his overall plank on criminal justice overall. This is really his big strength. He's also in favor of diversion and early intervention. He wants to end mandatory minimum, so we're not blindly sending people to prison for simple drug use. He believes in re-entry programs and actually working to increase access to educational and vocational training so that people can get reacclimated into their communities in a more productive way. He wants to end the stigma around drug addiction and doesn't want to treat it as a crime, but as a healthcare matter. And very, very importantly at the end there, he wants to legalize marijuana in New Jersey. So look, the establishment media takes that last part as a throwaway. Oh, it's cued, or it's a way to get some younger voters. No. The war on drugs has cost us dearly, trillions of dollars in taxpayer money to imprison all these people. It's caused gang warfare, and then it has imprisoned all sorts of people that never belonged in prison in the first place. It is applied grossly unjustly and disproportionately, as he points out. White people and black people do drugs at the same rate, but especially marijuana. But black people are put in jail for marijuana use at 3.7 times the rate of white people. So that is incredibly unfair. And so there's now more African American males in jail today than there were African American males in slavery at the end of the Civil War. That is unbelievable. And Jim Johnson is saying, look, we have to start ending that gross injustice, and we start where we have power. So if he becomes the governor of New Jersey, those are the reforms that he plans to put in place. On that plank, it sounds great. But I want you guys to go do your own research. Don't just trust the establishment media or necessarily even your local media if they're going around saying that politicians can't be corrupted by millions of dollars in donations. And actually find out what the policy positions of all the four major candidates that are in the race, and make your own call. I'm proud that Johnson's campaign gave us the exclusive on how they are going to expand their criminal justice reform plank. And so now you have more information about that race. And as a person who lived in New Jersey, grew up in New Jersey, and loves New Jersey, I really, really want you to make the right choice, whatever the right choice is for you. All right, I gotta go. Anna will be here with you guys in a couple of minutes, and she's got a wonderful second hour for you guys. If you're near Oxford, maybe I'll see you there tomorrow, whenever the Oxford Union debate is. Okay, sorry for the really bad info on that. But you know what? Once I find out, I'll put it on Twitter. So at Cenk Uygur, good luck trying to spell that. Follow me, and at the Young Turks as well. We'll put up that information too. And I'll see you guys on Monday. We've got a great show for you the next couple of days while I'm out too. All right, we'll be right back.